Welcome to the Real Estate Marketing Podcast. My name is Jerome Lewis. I'm your host for today. The Real Estate Marketing Podcast is a podcast where we talk real estate, marketing, business, and leadership. We talk these things for real estate agents, real estate investors, and real estate entrepreneurs. The Real Estate Marketing Podcast is a podcast that has two purposes. Purpose number one, to educate and inform our audience and listeners. Purpose number two, Joel, to highlight you, your business, your service, or your product in a way that provides value to you, including market exposure and content creation. With that, we have a very special guest who's here for a second time. We have Joel Miller. He's been investing in rental property since 1978 and flipping houses since 1971. He has served
1991, Jerome.
1991.
Yeah.
He has served in numerous leadership roles in his professional and personal circles and teaches real estate investing at both the beginner and advanced levels. He is also a hard money lender to other investors as well as a trusted mentor, author, podcast guest, and benefactor to his community. Before all this, Joel started out obtaining a BA in accounting. Joel, I'm excited that you're here. Welcome to the show.
Jerome, I am pumped. I had such a good time when we were together the last time that I'm happy that we're doing another episode so quickly after that. What you got in your hand there?
Oh, man. Joel, I have on our last episode, we talked about your book, yeah. Build Real Estate Wealth, the big book on income properties. And Joel actually sent me a physically signed
copy. Oh, open the cover. I think my signature's on there.
It is in there. And it says, yeah. Hi, Jerome. It was really cool to be on your podcast. I think we hit it off really well, and I look forward to more interviews. Thank you for being
and here we are
willing to promote my book. Absolutely, Joel. Thank you for coming to our show. And the date, I just see the date. It's signed on my daughter's birthday, so that's special there.
Yeah. Cool.
So, Joel, I'm excited. Tell us, for those that may not have seen the first episode, tell us a little bit about you, and then we're going to talk about the book a little bit, some wealth, and some other topics that we have stored for today.
Well, yeah, you kind of covered my bio there. You know, I got interested in real estate back in junior high when somebody built some apartment buildings on my paper route and decided I wanted to do that, and I was eventually able to do that. Got my BA in accounting, and I think you might remember that I also was a professional mobile disc jockey, which went on, you know, for 35 years. I retired from that in 2011 after 5,051 parties, you know, so that was, and that's kind of part of why I wrote the book, or the premise of the book, which is that real estate, rentals, investments, and so on doesn't have to be an either or thing. You can add that to something else that you're passionate about and you don't want to give up. You got a great job, you got a big hobby or something like that. Like I had I really wanted to be a performer for those 35 years, but I also wanted to, you know, add to my income and bolster my retirement by investing in rental property. So you can go pedal to the metal and leave your job ASAP if you want. My book provides you with the path to do that, or you can just add it on to something you got. So, and as you mentioned, I became, I flipped over 100 houses, and in 2018 became a hard money lender, which gives me a lot of satisfaction of being a part of the equation for other investors that are earlier on in their journey with either projects they're buying for house flips or keeper rental properties, something like that. So, but I can tell you a little bit about what's in the book if you want.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to ask you next. We talked about your book last time, and then I actually have one here. I'm just going to pull it up because I'm a huge book fan. And I want you to tell us again, for those who may not have heard that are new to the podcast, who the book is for, what's in the book. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we call it the big book because it's 460 pages long. It's a lot longer than a lot of books in the genre. And when I was writing it, they said, that's too many. And I said, no, I got to put it all down, man. I got a teenage son that I'm writing this for. And if he's the only one that ever reads it, you know, that's okay. But I wrote it as though the person that's reading it is down the hall, and I'm accountable to that person for what I say in there. And there's nothing in there that I wouldn't recommend to your kid or my own kid and that I haven't done or wouldn't do. You know, it's not written to people that I, as though I was not going to meet those people and not be accountable to them. You know, it's really, it's no BS. It's the real deal. But it's becoming like the go-to resource for changing your life with property. In fact, I'm sure you know who Ron LeBrand is, and Ron reviewed the book, and his comment was, "I wish I would have had his book whenever I was getting started." So, you know, it's kind of gives you an idea how thorough it is, but it's not the kind of book that you buy and say, "Oh," and you read it, and that's great, you know, and you put it on back in your bookshelf. Like I see it behind you on your bookshelf, I'm sure it's right there. Actually, that's not your bookshelf; that's your desk, because that's what the people are saying is, you buy this book and you park it on your desk because you're going to refer to it, and the reason is that you know, it's written for people who already have property, and they're looking for some game-changing information to just kind of supercharge what they got. But it's also written for people who are just getting started, or they've maybe not even bought anything yet, and they're not even 100% sure real estate is for them. It's the whole layout, you know, of everything from mindset all the way through. So the reason why it's a book I say to keep around to refer to is because it's got like over 150 checklists of everything from your mindset to forming your business entity to you know, finding, negotiating, and financing deals to preparing a property to sell or to rent out to somebody, finding tenants. I think we're going to talk about tenant selection a little bit here today, and managing your property. Tenant management, tenant selection, or tenant management and property management are actually two different things. It talks about tax implications and how to run your office. It talks about preparing financial statements to look good to the banks. I got lots of secrets on how to do that, because a lot of people sell themselves short with the presentation that they make to bankers, and they don't get loans that they need to further their career. And this is a lot about how to make sure that the banker loves your application. Talk about understanding the difference between riches and wealth, and best practices for keeping calamity out of your life. I'm all about hitting calamity off at the pass, you know, so that you don't have things going wrong and you're not spending all your time putting out fires that come up because you could have prevented it. And there's bonus material on house flipping. It's a chapter in there about house flipping, but you get to the end of it, there's a QR code that takes you to the bonus material for the how-to about house flipping, because this is mainly about rentals, not flipping, but it does talk about it. So no one should think for a moment that it's just for beginners, because anybody experienced is still going to get something out of this. And as I mentioned, I have my son, you know, he's getting ready to close. He's 19. He's in college. He's getting ready to close on his second rental property next week. So he bought his first one a week out of high school last year, and he needed to know this information. And that was the genesis of the book. So that's Build Real Estate Wealth. Enjoy the journey of rental property investment.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate you sharing that. One of the things we discussed before coming in here, we wanted to talk about the importance of tenant selection. Like you even mentioned, there's a difference between, I think, tenant management and tenant selection. Not exactly sure, but
yeah, tenant management and property management.
Tenant management and property management is exactly what it is. So tell us a little bit about that, please.
Well, it stems from my underlying premise that tenant selection is paramount to having a good time in this business here. You can be good maybe at finding property, fixing property, financing property, but if you're not good at selecting the people that are going to be in there using your valuable property without your supervision for an extended period of time, you're not going to have a good time. So that's a skill set you really have to learn. And we spend a lot of time on that in the book, along with those other subjects that I just mentioned about the financing and, you know, managing the property. But, you know, when would you say the tenant selection actually begins?
Me, I don't have tenants, so I couldn't even provide a real educated guess. If I had to think about it, I would say at the application process.
Most people say just what you said, but tenant selection actually begins when you think about the possibility of maybe perhaps could possibly buy some real estate, because every decision you make after that narrows the universe of people who are likely to be your tenants. So what I mean is, like, you make first the decision that you're going to buy in your town. Okay, well, that just eliminated everybody else in the world other than the people that want to live in your town. And then even the neighborhood that you want to live in and the type of property, you know, is it a single family home? Is it a multi-family unit? And the condition of the property, how you're going to prepare the property to appeal to prospective tenants, and even how you advertise the property. Every single one of those decisions is effectively narrowing the universe of possible tenants, or shall I say defining the universe of the possible tenants that are likely to move into your place. So a lot of people, like you say, that, you know, tenant selection begins with an application, or when you're, or it begins whenever you're talking to somebody that responded to one of your ads. But actually, that's kind of like midstream. You've already selected a lot of tenants before somebody even responds to your ad and picks up the phone, if that's how you're communicating with people, to call you. So then that's when the tenant screening begins, which is where you are gathering specific information about the caller, about that particular possible applicant, to, you know, kind of screen them as to even further narrow down, you know, whether that's the right person for your property. So, you know, I teach the Landlord 101 class to the members of our professional organization of landlords here in Northwestern PA. I'm in Erie, PA, halfway between Cleveland and Buffalo, directly north of Pittsburgh, right along the lake here. And it's a good town for investing. And we have a really strong professional organization in Northwestern PA here. So I teach this Landlord 101 class, as well as some advanced classes. And what we cover in the Landlord 101 is not property acquisition. We are making the assumption that you already own the property. So what we're talking about is essentially property management and tenant management, which are kind of two different things. Property management is more about the physical part of it, you know, like maintaining a building, and tenant management is about the relationships and interactions and policies that you would have with your tenants. Okay. So at some point during this class, we cover tenant selection. Okay, and when we get to the end of that, and I've got them all, you know, plumped up on how to select people, how to talk on the phone. I'm gonna read it to you. I got this little essay that I read them that kind of sums it up. It says,
"Excellent. I was just gonna ask you about it because you mentioned that in the room, and I was like, essay. We didn't talk about that last episode, so we're looking forward to hearing this."
It says, "Your success and happiness as an investor in rental real estate is dependent directly on tenant selection. Unless your game is to just buy land and hold on to it until you can sell it at a gain, at some point you have to select a tenant." The idea being, you know, that the land doesn't have a tenant. Okay. "Tenant selection began when you were contemplating investing in rental real estate, and it continues through evaluating prospective properties, purchasing the property, preparing for occupancy, marketing it, screening interested renters, and evaluating applications. At that point, you must make a decision about the rental application you have your eyes on. Some decisions will be obvious when it comes to whom to turn down, and some will not be." This is the important part. "Your mission is to eliminate every person in the world until you end up with someone who is likely to pay the rent on time and beat the place up. You are going to let this person occupy and use something that you own that is worth tens of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars, without your direct supervision for an extended period of time. So, pardon me, don't work to qualify the applicant. That's their job. Your job is to keep trying to disqualify them until you run out of things that would eliminate them. Then you may have a good applicant, but only time will tell." So you see what I mean is you got to keep drilling down to make sure that they have the ability to pay the rent and that they have good references from other places that they've rented as far as taking care of the place and so on. And you got to be careful about getting caught up in saying, "Oh, I think I'll cut the corners. I'll let this person in there. I kind of like them, you know." And you know, now you're qualifying the tenant. That's their job. Your job is to try to figure out why you shouldn't rent to them. And when you run out of reasons, there's your tenant, you know? So, It's very important because, after all, it's the tenants that are stroking the checks every month and taking care of your property when you're not around. And if you don't have that skill set down, you're going to be a don't wanter, as we call them, and end up selling your property at a discounted price to another investor who's going to take it over and put better tenants in there and solve the problems.
Thank you. So I would like to address mindset next. And okay. I'm going to be very specific on it, right? So I'm thinking, like, let's do a little role play or acting, whatever we want to call it, imagination. Let's say I am a brand new person and I come across Joel's book. Mm-hmm. Big book on income properties. What kind of mindset should I have to be prepared to read this book, apply the information? What's your perspective on what I just said?
Well, you have to be open to the fact that real estate is not for everybody, but it's for more people than you might realize. And some people, come at this not 100% sure whether real estate is for them. And so what I would say is that we use an acronym called IDEAL, IDEAL. And real estate, rental real estate, is ideal because it produces I, income, D, depreciation, E, equity, A, appreciation, and L is leverage. In other words, using other people's money to buy the property. In other words, loans. And the rental business, in a nutshell, is that you're going to find a way to acquire property that other people will use. And then you're going to let people who use it buy it for you with their payments, which are greater than your expenses. And then you're going to put up with minor irritations from the people and the maintenance issues along the way while you enjoy the cash flow and equity growth. And then you repeat steps 1 through 3. So you say, well, that's great. Well, I'm not thinking about the mind here. Well, people have to overcome three preconceptions about investing. A lot of times people think that real estate, rental property sort of stuff is all about broken toilets and bad tenants, and the way to overcome that is through education, to understand that, first of all, the whole toilet thing is essentially a myth. In 48 years almost, I don't think I've ever fixed a toilet in the middle of the night. In fact, I generally don't fix them because the tenants are the ones that plug them up and I tell them to unplug them, but that's just a kind of the equipment that people pick on, when they want to say, oh, I don't want to fix a toilet. Well, you don't have to know everything. You just have to know who to call, if there's something you don't know how to do. So that's part of the mindset you have to have, is that real estate is not a thing where you have to figure out everything ahead of time and know how to take care of all the different kinds of property and so on. It's great if you have some skill sets that you can employ, but the important thing is to understand that there are people that are in business to take care of virtually everything that might come up at any rental property that you may have. And so you got to learn, who to call. And the other part that I mentioned there was bad tenants. Well, we just talked about tenant selection. And again, that's a skill set that if you learn, then you will not find yourself renting to the kind of tenants that are giving real estate that kind of impression in your mind initially. So the mindset has to be that you don't have to know everything. You just need to know enough to get started and then get yourself around other people, like in our professional organization, that you're going to rub elbows with that are at different points in the journey that you can gain information from. And the third thing that I mentioned is a preconception that people have to get over is that they don't have the money, or even that they would lose money on it. And I will say this. There are, I cover in the book a whole lot of ways where you can obtain the money that you might need to get started. There's a whole chapter on financing property that deals with obtaining money from things that you might not think of as being readily available to you. Like, just quick example, like a life insurance policy that you have that has an ability for you to borrow money against that policy at a set interest rate that was prescribed whenever you got the policy, that they can't even ask you what you're going to use it for, and you don't even have to pay it back. It just comes out of your death proceeds if you were to die. You know, it'd be that much less that the thing would pay off. That's just one example. You know, so we talk about how to get the money, and I will say that in real estate, it's more of a case of, if you have a good deal, you're going to find the money. It's harder to find the deals than it is to find the money. You know, if you've got a good deal, you're going to find a banker, you're going to find a private lender, a hard money lender that you're going to be able to get the money from to do that deal. So you got to get over that. And also the part about the fear of losing money. Again, it gets back to education. It's not impossible to lose money in real estate. I will sell that or say that, but if you get the basics and like a book like mine or, you know, other things like it, then it's not likely that you're going to lose money. Real estate is such a forgiving thing. If somebody said that the only way to lose money is if you're in real estate is you run out of time. In other words, you haven't owned the property long enough to have whatever went wrong rectify itself, you know. And so, of course, you want to know the quickest way to make $1 million in real estate?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you start out with $2 million. And you know where I'm going with that. And then you lose $1 million. Hey, I just got $1 million. And, you know, that's a joke. I started out with nothing and I still have most of it.
Makes sense.
So that doesn't make sense really either. That's a joke. The mindset is you don't have to know everything. General Colin Powell, who ran the most powerful army in the world, is often quoted as saying that we make our decisions when we know about 70% of what it is that we need to know. And we're talking war there, you know, not just buying a piece of property. So that's the mindset. Believe it and act. Oh, there's one other thing. You gotta take action. Of course, you gotta be careful not to get caught up in the whole paralysis of analysis thing, where you just think like, oh, you know, I need to go to one more seminar, or I need to take one more class, or I need to find a mentor, and then I'll be rich. You know, no. You have to, like I said, you don't have to know everything. You just have to take action. And beyond that, you have to have commitment, because action without commitment will not bring you success.
Thank you. So I want to do one more mindset. We talked about the beginner. Now I want to talk about the people that are more experienced, whether they're like have a couple of rental properties or they have an entire portfolio. What kind of mindset? Is a different mindset between the two I just mentioned? Talk about mindset a little bit for people that have some experience already.
Well, at any point, there's still more to learn. So you have to maintain the same mindset, even though you've maybe got a bunch of properties, and but you still don't know how to buy the high rise, you know, downtown. Well, then there's still the mindset of needing to learn and being open to new ideas, so that you can take whatever you've got going to an even higher level. So no matter where you're at, you've still got to understand that there's more you can achieve, and there's more money out there. And if it's a good deal, you're going to find the money. And just get around the people that are doing what you want to do, and, you know, be open to what they have to tell you.
Thank you, sir, for sharing that. One more thing I would like to talk about before I get us out of here. I want you to tell us about riches versus wealth, please. What's the difference?
Well, that I spent a lot of time on that. There's a whole chapter in the book called The Impact of Wealth, and it talks about the difference between riches and wealth in the sense that it's like the difference between knowledge and wisdom. You know, knowledge is the facts, and wisdom is being able to apply the facts in the right way to do good, you see. It's also like the difference between skill and talent. Talent might be something you are born with, you know, but until you work at it, you don't actually have skill. You know, that's what really takes skill is what takes your talent and takes it to a higher level because of your effort that you put into it. So with riches and wealth, riches is kind of like just having the money, and wealth is being able to actually have happiness with what you've got. You know, that could be a lot of money, that could be not much money. You know, when I teach the class or do a mastermind or I'm talking in front of people around here, you know, I'm well known for what I'm going to tell you right now. And that is that I say that if I had a choice between losing all my money and losing all my relationships, I would lose all my money in a heartbeat because my relationships will help me get my money back over time. But if I had no relationships and a pile of money, you know, what good would that be? Nobody to share it with, and that would be empty. That's not success in my estimation. You know, so you have to understand that it's not all about acquiring the cash or the toys or whatever and not giving back. You know, the bottom line is that it's better to keep a relationship intact than it is to obsess, you know, over some perceived slight or to try to squeeze every dime out of a situation when the other party might feel taken advantage of. But here's the bottom line. Don't make a withdrawal from a good relationship just to make a deposit in your bank account. You see what I'm saying? You know, I quote in the book a guy named Jeff Pizzino, who I first became acquainted with back in the 90s because we were both contributing articles to the same real estate publication, magazine, and so on. I never met him until I was working on my book and I had to get permission to quote him on, you know, when I was using what he said in the book. But he had an article once about the 10 myths about wealth. And I picked two of those myths to expand on, you know, in the book here. And the first one is that being wealthy, this is a myth, you know, being wealthy is all about material possessions. You know, we kind of just touched on that, and that's kind of a myth. There's a huge difference between accumulating money and being wealthy. You know, never pursue money at the expense of your health, for example, your peace of mind, your loving relationships, and just enjoying personal activities and so on. Because money is only a means of creating wealth. Wealth is a means of creating a great life. And, you know, personal joy, you know, must be cultivated along the way. So that's one of the myths that we talked about. And the other one is the acquisition of wealth is a win/lose game. That's a myth. It doesn't have to be that the only way you can win is that somebody else loses. You know, if you go through life thinking like that, you know, that's not going to work out. Like when we put real estate deals together, we try to have a win situation. Like we win, the seller wins, the tenant wins, the neighbors win when we fix up the house. You know, people win that are getting employed to work on the house. It's all win, you know, and not, you know, I'm somebody's going to lose and I'm going to make a deal here. So, you know, there should be no stigma or you know, somebody shying away from getting rich because, or wealthy because, you know, you not becoming rich will benefit no one, you know, but you becoming rich benefits others in abundance of ways. That's what we're talking about, employing people to do things that's their work, you know, and you're acquiring wealth as you go along here. But it's a fact that more wealth and opportunity, the more wealth and opportunities you create for yourself, the more wealth and opportunities you create for other people. So, you know, don't shy away from the attempt, you know, to accumulate riches, but you got to do it the right way. And when you have money, you've got to find ways to give it back, you know, in your community that you extracted the cash from in the form of rents or selling houses or whatever. But, it's just the way that things work together. You know, people that have a lot of wisdom sometimes can make decisions without a whole lot of facts, you know, and people that just want to have knowledge, they just want all the facts, and sometimes they make poor decisions, you know. So wealth represents the happiness or fullness in your life that you feel because of what you have.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that. Joel, this has been an excellent episode. Tell us how we can learn more about the book. Where can we purchase it online?
Well, I would direct you to the website that's directly for the book. It's www.joelmillerbooks.com. Joel is J-O-E-L. You can see it on the cover of that book right behind you there. And Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, books is plural, joelmillerbooks.com. And, you know, on the homepage of that, you can actually open a page that has the entire table of contents of the book. So you can see, you know, exactly what you're getting and how it takes you from mindset all the way through, you know, building an entity or starting an entity, and then gets into property acquisition and management and wraps up with a lot of this philosophical stuff we've been talking about. But there's another button you can click on there that'll actually show you a couple of the best paragraphs from each chapter. You know, that you can see exactly how this is written and what's in there. And by the way, it's set up really cool. People have really caught on to this. They like it. I use a whole lot of bold type words and sentences and paragraphs in there. So that if you did nothing more than skip from bold type to bold type to bold type to bold type all the way through the book, you get the whole idea. It can be a quick read, you know, if you don't feel like, 460 pages. And then if you feel you want to know more about something, you just stop and read all the pages or all the words in the chapter or whatever. So it works really good like that. And then throughout the website, on all the pages, there are buy buttons. And if you click on that, it just takes you right to the page on Amazon where it's sold. You can find it on Amazon and about 15 or 20 other platforms that sell books online. And you can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and X, and send me a message if you want from the website. There's a contact page. You can, it goes right to my email.
Well, thank you, Joel. I got my copy here. You can snap a screenshot of that if you want.
That's cool.
Yeah. I really appreciate this episode. Thank you for coming back for a second time. If you could close us out with one word, no explanation, what word would that be?
Relationships.
Joel, thank you so much. This has been excellent and an exciting episode. Thank you.
Oh, Jerome, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.